much more pleasant edition of the Badgers, Wisconsin Badgers podcast from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel comes at you after the Badgers defeat the Iowa Hawkeyes at House of Horrors, Kinnick Stadium. 28-17, the Badgers scored two touchdowns in the fourth quarter late, both in the final minute, to turn it around, rally past Iowa, and start Big Ten play at 1-0. A huge, huge win on Saturday night in primetime for the Badgers. That's got, I'm sure, a lot of people, you know, breathing a little bit of a sigh of relief after a very tough loss to BYU the week before. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Wisconsin Badgers Journal Sentinel podcast. I got Jeff Patricus joining me in just a minute to talk about this Badgers team. Jeff was at the game in Iowa as the Badgers again rallied back from a deficit. It was 17-14 until very late in the game. Big touchdown pass from Alex Hornibrook to A.J. Taylor, giving the Badgers the lead. They then get the ball back in a nice little icing on the cake touchdown from Alec Ingold. That puts some separation between the Badgers and the Hawkeyes. Now the Badgers go into the bye week. They get a break, and then they'll come back and host Nebraska on October 6th before traveling to the Big House to face Michigan the week after that. So definitely a big sigh of relief for Badgers fans, and what an outing for Alex Hornibrook, the quarterback. He took some criticism after the loss to BYU. A lot of players did. I don't think anybody played well against BYU. We talked about that last week with Jeff. But Alex Hornibrook, outstanding against Iowa. He's 17 of 22 for 205 yards, threw three touchdowns, no interceptions, very much looked poised the entire time, led that team on a long drive to take the lead. And talk to Jeff about this, but just the way it seems Alex Hornibrook responds is pretty impressive. He just seems to be able to tune out anything, the negativity, the struggles he's had in the recent past, and just blow past that and put it together. We've seen that in some really big games, and we certainly saw it at Iowa. Jonathan Taylor ran the ball 25 times for 113 yards. He did not find the end zone, but again, 100-yard performance from him. Tywan Deal, some big yards late. From Tywan Deal, 6 carries, 42 yards. Alec Ingold, 37 yards, plus that touchdown. Also saw a lot of Garrett Groshek. Even in the fourth quarter, 8 carries, 33 yards. Groshek has been quite the weapon, particularly on third down. A.J. Taylor did mention him. He caught that touchdown, 3 catches, 44 yards. Jake Ferguson got another touchdown, 4 catches, 58 yards. He is having a very nice start to his freshman season. Kendrick Pryor, 3 catches for another 33 yards. Garrett Groshek caught 3 balls as well with another 19 yards to his tally. Danny Davis found the end zone. It was his only catch of the day, but it was a 12-yard touchdown. On defense, Ryan Connolly, Dakota Dixon, and TJ Edwards all led the way with 4 tackles apiece. Edwards with the big interception that sealed it pretty much, played into the final touchdown from Alec Ingold. That was a big play. A couple turnovers on special teams, just huge in this game. Iowa twice getting a little too close to a kicked ball, and it winds up burning them big time as the Badgers were able to take over the second time. They were able to score and put some pressure back on Iowa, who did come back to take the lead, but again, that was not permanent. So let's bring in Jeff Patricus to chat about this team and chat about where we're at now that the Badgers are 3-1 on the season and 1-0 in the Big Ten. And joined now by Jeff Patricus. He's the Wisconsin Badgers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He was at Kinnick Stadium watching the Wisconsin Badgers rally to beat the Iowa Hawkeyes on Saturday night. It's a very impressive game, fun game for quarterback Alex Hornibrook. And so, Jeff, I'm going to start there. I get the sense he's legitimately one of those guys that can tune out, you know, the noise, what people are saying about him, even maybe what he's hearing on the field or anything. He's just totally in his zone, and he responds from a bad game with an excellent one. Do you think he's the type of guy who's just, you know, who's not gonna, you know, gonna have that short memory and do what he did on Saturday night?
Well, it's interesting that you asked that, because I remember watching him as a true freshman before he redshirted, when he was an early enrollee, and I watched him in spring ball, and he'd have a bad series or a bad session in a drill, whatever, and he'd come back and he'd play well, and he kept doing that, and I eventually called his high school coach and I said, hey, this is what I'm seeing at practice, you know, tell me about this guy. And he said that when Alex was in high school, that was his MO, that if he would have a bad series in a game, he would almost always respond, you know, with a touchdown drive the next time, or if he'd have a bad game, he'd be outstanding the next time. And I think he's kind of shown that ever since he started playing at Wisconsin. He will have maybe a bad series, but he will always come back. He kind of lets it go off his back. As far as scrutiny from fans and things like that, social media, he is not active on social media at all. I'm sure he's aware of what things are out there. I know his teammates are in talking to some of them. But yeah, that stuff doesn't affect him. He is one of those guys who, if something goes poorly, whether it's his responsibility or not, he does not let it affect him. And I think the instance of that you saw in the Iowa game, I was listening to some of the commentary by Joel Klatt after looking at the video, where he pointed out that Wisconsin had basically one really long sustained drive, and that was the 95-yarder after the fourth down stop. But when the game was on the line, they drove down meticulously, methodically, 88 yards for the go-ahead score, and you would have thought they had the capability of doing that all night, or that you would have never suspected the offense had been frustrated because they just went down. And that's pretty much the way he plays.
Yeah, and I mean, the obvious example is the Orange Bowl last year. He's had such huge moments, and the Badgers are on a nice road winning streak at this point. You know, it seems like he doesn't get flustered by that stuff. Would you call him, I mean, is it fair or unfair to call him inconsistent because he does have those clunker series, those games like BYU last week, or is that unfair? I mean, do you just think of him as a guy who steps up when the spotlight is brightest?
I think, you know, at the end of last year, he was a guy who could make winning plays for you. He did against Michigan. He did it, even if you think back to the Iowa game last year where he had the two pick sixes, one of which was his fault, the other one was the ball bounced off the hands of the running back. But if you think of that game, there was a key sequence. I think it might have been after T.J. Edwards' interception near midfield, somewhere around there. He had a huge third down throw to Danny Davis near the boundary, over the cornerback and in front of the safety, that led to a very important touchdown in that game. So even in that game, when he wasn't at his best, he still has the capacity to make big plays. And I don't know of any quarterback, pro or college, other than the elite of the elite, who you're not going to say, you know what, he had some bad throws in this game. He wasn't at his best. He didn't have a really good game today. You could say that about anybody. So is he inconsistent? Yes, in the sense that a lot of quarterbacks are inconsistent.
Mm-hmm. Elsewhere on the offense, you know, this offensive line obviously had a lot of preseason attention, and it's taken some lumps, you know, just from fan reaction and obviously the fact that they started out a little slow. But one thing you could never say about them is that they were thin. They've got some really good depth, and it seems like we saw another great example of that against Iowa. Jason Erdman, who had to prepare for multiple positions because it wasn't clear if he was going to be a blocking tight end or a center or where he was going to be on the line, he ends up filling in for Tyler Biadasz, who gets hurt, and he has a great game. Do you think we'll see more of Erdman going forward? And I realize that kind of hinges on the health of Biadasz. Seems like, I mean, he's obviously good enough to be playing in big spots.
Well, first of all, especially with the bye week, I don't think Biadasz is going to miss any time. I just, you know, asked around yesterday and guys, I got the impression from guys that they didn't think it was anything serious. And especially with a week coming off to rest, unless there's an aggravation in practice, once they get up and running again, prepping for Nebraska, I think you'll see him there. I think they liked what they got out of that jumbo package. I think they really like what Bruss and Erdman can give them, whether it's individually or in tandem. So I don't see any reason why you won't see it again. Now, if you get Xander Neville back healthy, you don't have to do it as much, or maybe you just use one of them. And it depends on what the other team's strengths are that you're facing that week. But, you know, it really gave them some flexibility. They really had some good push at times running the ball. And then Iowa had to respond by saying, okay, well, we're going to sell out to stop the run. And they were able to hit him with some play action in a couple of key instances. So I really like that. But part of it's going to depend on, you know, if Xander Neville's healthy, you don't have to do it as much. Here's something also to think about, too, in terms of offensive line depth. Caden Lyles is a guy they thought would be a player on the offensive line this year. And he would have been had they not needed him to shift him over because of injuries on the defensive line. Because they really like him a lot as a big-time offensive lineman, and I think he and both the staff, they're hopeful that next year, once the depth settles, that they can move him back to the offensive side of the ball.
You brought up Xander Neville. I was going to ask. It's obviously hard to predict what happens 2 weeks from now with the bye week, but I'm guessing we should expect to see Neville and Van Ginkle on defense sort of probably back to starter snaps at that point, huh?
I would say expect is too strong a word because you just don't know. For example, here's how it basically works with guys who have ankle, foot injuries, things like that. They test them out. They rehab, they test them out on the practice field, see what they can do, see what kind of movements they can or can't do. Then you see how the injury responds the next day. If everything's good, then they can ramp them up a little bit. But if it just doesn't feel good, then you have to scale them back. So you would think with time off to rehab and rest and not have to play a game, get your feet up a little bit, that if all goes well, they should be available full duty. But you're just, they're going to have to wait and see until, because I'm sure the players won't practice this week until maybe Thursday, maybe Friday. And then you just got to see how they respond. And then really once they get up and going, the hard days, the week of the game, which would be generally Tuesday and Wednesday.
In the fourth quarter against Iowa, we saw a healthy dose of a couple other guys. Jonathan Taylor is obviously this team's workhorse, but we saw a lot of Tywan Deal, a lot of Garrett Groshek. And I think if you look at the overall distribution of carries, it's still what you would have expected. Jonathan Taylor getting, you know, the lion's share. But I was interested that those guys were getting a lot of, you know, important snaps and getting the football. Do you think that's a comment on Taylor's ball security, or is that just the coaching staff's sort of supreme confidence in those other guys?
It's not ball security issues. If you remember back, they did this last year, only the two guys who were involved, or the guys involved were Groshek, Chris James in the Big Ten Championship game, and Bradrick Shaw also when he was healthy. You know, and there were certain things I talked to running backs coach John Settle in the offseason. They said, you know, there are certain things we didn't want to put too much on Jonathan's plate that to overwhelm him. And then also, it's basically you've got X number of guys who you think can help you. Garrett Groshek is really good on third downs. He can be a blocker on blitz pickup. He can run the ball if you want to try the little inside handoff. Plus, if you look at yesterday, when it was a third and five conversion, I believe, to the 32. He ran a little, you know, square in, caught a tough pass, and just made it to the line to gain. And that was on their game-winning touchdown drive. He can do so many things. And if you look at Tywan Deal, he's averaging about 5.8 yards per carry. And I think up to 29 carries now, he has not lost a yard on any of his carries this year.
Wow.
He is running behind his pads. He's just running over people. He had a 14-yard run yesterday where eluded a guy at the line of scrimmage, ran through a diving tackle attempt, was hit by a couple guys 7 yards downfield, and then gained another 7 yards after contact. So they're maximizing what those guys can do. And I asked Paul Christ about it after the game, and I'm going to eventually write about it before the Nebraska game. That is, you don't call it tailback by committee, but you're maximizing what your guys can do, and you're easing then Jonathan Taylor's workload to keep him fresher in the year. And there are certain things Groshek and Deal do that they're better than Jonathan Taylor at certain little niches, and they're going to take advantage of it.
I feel bad. I didn't even mention the least likely home run threat in college football, Alec Ingold, who comes up with a massive touchdown play every game. It's crazy how that's working out for him. So I want your take on what I think is probably the biggest play of the night, that second turnover on special teams when Zach Bond blocks his man into the football and Trevion Blaylock, who's just waiting there for it. It looked scripted. You know, he falls on it and the Badgers get the ball back with great field position. Was that play by design? Was it a lucky break? It was kind of hard to get a sense with the camera angles what all went on there, but what did you see on that play?
It was a lucky break. The kid from Iowa just made a mistake. I mean, and it wasn't – what the kid from Iowa did, he came flying down for no reason. He wasn't conscious of what was going on with the ball. And generally, it's either the punt returner's in charge of that. You know, sometimes it's Peter. That's their call. Stay away, stay away, stay away. Different teams have different, you know, one-word calls to let their guys know, ball's on the ground, don't come anywhere near it. Maybe the kid didn't hear it. Maybe the call wasn't made. We don't know that. But if you watch the play, he does engage Zach Bond. He drills Zach Bond. I mean, he just drops him. But then he also, Adam Bay is hustling down, the long snapper, and he's near the ball. And the kid decides to engage Adam Bay. And it's when he engages Adam Bay that his left leg swings around and clips the ball. And Blaylock, to his credit, is just standing over the ball watching it and not touching it. And then as soon as the ball moves, his head reacts, and he's like, I'm falling on it. You know, I don't think he knew exactly whose leg touched it, but once he saw someone hit it, he's like, I'm going to fall on it, and it was a hell of a play by the kid.
Yeah, that was a huge turning point for the Badgers. A bit of a surprise in the starting lineup when we saw Darren Harrell get his first start at cornerback in place of Caesar Williams. Was that something that caught you off guard? That seemed like a surprise.
Yeah, I mean, Jim has said that he is going to play guys because he's rotated guys in and out, especially during practice before camp. This is now before Dante Carrier-Williams left, okay? Yeah. he looked at a lot of guys, a lot of different combinations in camp. And there were some days Harrell was running with the ones. There were some days he wasn't. And Jim has said, you know, once we talked to him, he didn't divulge before the game that Harrell was going to, you know, play much or start. But he said, look, if I see a guy performing well in practice, he's going to earn playing time in a game. And yesterday was an interesting game because Williams then came back in. Hicks had his ups and downs. They had to settle him down a little bit. And I noted this in part of our coverage is that you are going to probably see a lot of growing pains with that crew because they're all, you know, the three top cornerbacks, Harrell, Williams, and Hicks, are all young guys. And you saw they got beat on certain plays yesterday. They competed hard on others. And they're going to make mistakes, especially I was thinking, okay, it's going to be interesting to see this secondary go up against Penn State, you know, later in the season, because that's going to be a tough offense to try to slow down.
Who else stood out for you in this game that we haven't talked about? We haven't mentioned the receiving core that obviously had a big hand in the late drives. Anybody else that you really thought played, you know, particularly well?
Well, Jake Ferguson made some big plays, including, to his credit, he had a drop on one of the drives. It was in the fourth quarter. He was livid with himself because the ball hit him right in the hands. He should have caught it. I want to say it was a third down play.
Mm-hmm, yep.
And he talked about it after. He said, you know what? Everyone came up to me and said, look, don't worry about it. Shake it off. We're going to need you. And he came back with a big catch from, I think, about a 12-yard gain to the 17, which then on the next play, Hornibrook hit A.J. Taylor for the touchdown. So there were, you know, Engel did some nice things in the both as a receiver and in the run game, obviously, with the touchdown run. The play that on the go-ahead touchdown, I look back on it overnight on the video. It was almost the exact setup as they ran against Michigan last year when they were down 10-7 and Hornibrook hit A.J. Taylor to go up 14-10. The only difference was the tight end was Fumagalli in that formation. This year, the tight end was Jake Ferguson. They induced the safety the same way by the tight end going to the post. Once the cornerback saw that, he threw it to his receiver, who was A.J. Taylor, who had beaten his guy to the inside, and it was a perfect throw and an easy pitch and catch.
So we all acknowledge anything can happen, but given what you've seen from other teams in the Big Ten West this year, I got to think Wisconsin is now back to being kind of the favorite to win the rest of these intra-division battles. Have you seen anybody in that group that you think can really give a challenge to Wisconsin the rest of the way?
Well, before the season, I looked at all their road games, and not all of them are obviously against West Division teams, but mm-hmm. I still look at two divisional road games as really difficult tests, and that would be Northwestern and Purdue. Now, Northwestern, just because that's a well-coached crew, they got some talent, and it is not, you know, for whatever the reasons are, Wisconsin teams don't go down to Northwestern and play that well. They get beat in ways that you don't think they should get beat. And Purdue, that's a good offensive coach, and now it appears their defense was struggling early because they had lost a ton of personnel. I think about, I'm going to say 10 starters off that defensive unit that was really good last year. But if they find their way defensively, that's going to be a tough place to or a tough team to beat down in West Lafayette later in the year.
Nebraska is the next team the Badgers are going to see. Like we said, they got the bye week next Saturday, and then they come back October 6th to Camp Randall, where the Huskers, they have fallen on some pretty hard times. Is there anything you've seen from Nebraska that could give the Badgers some problems?
Their quarterback is really good, the freshman, Martinez. Now, he was playing, he had hurt his knee, missed a game, was wearing a brace against Michigan. They played him early. Once things got out of hand, they said, that's it, you're done. Sit down, take the rest of the day off because we don't want to put you at risk, which was really smart. But he can play, and they've got some guys on the perimeter to make plays for him, but he's clearly the catalyst of that offense. So he can cause problems for defenses. But the thing that really stood out to me was the ease with which Michigan just imposed its physical will on Nebraska's defense. It reminded me in some ways of the way the times Wisconsin would run all over Nebraska when Bo Pelini was the coach. And I didn't expect that. I hadn't seen them yet this year. I didn't know what they were going to look like, but they just got run over by Michigan's offensive front and tight ends and that. So, you know, Martinez can give me some problems, but if Wisconsin is healthy and plays well, they should be able to win that game comfortably.
Jeff Patricus, you can find all his material at jsonline.com. You can follow him on Twitter, jpo1961. Jeff, we look forward to catching up with you again real soon. Thanks for doing this.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
That's all we got on the Wisconsin Badgers Journal Sentinel podcast for this week. We'll probably take next week off, barring some breaking news or some development, and let you enjoy the bye week. We will be back after the Badgers take on Nebraska. Again, that's October 6th back at Camp Randall. The Badgers will be favored to do that, win that one as well, and move to 2-0 in the West. But returning to the scene, of course, of that unfortunate loss to BYU a couple weeks ago. So I'm sure there will be no looking past a Nebraska team that is very much struggling to start the year in 2018. Want you to find us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts. Check us out, download us, definitely subscribe to us, rate us and review us. Let us know what you think. Every action you take there helps us broaden our reach and get to more people, more listeners. Appreciate everybody who has tuned in so far. We're progressively getting more and more listeners each week. Happy to take any feedback you want to provide. You can find me on Twitter at JR Radcliffe. That's JRRADCLIFFE. Let me know what you think, and we will try to implement what we can. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will catch you again in a couple weeks. Take care.